Welcome to Barrel Roll, episode 153. I'm your host, Jonah Gregory. With me today is Jesse Gregory.
System Remix!
Faithful co-host, and guest starring Michael Bachman.
Call 911 now! Seriously?
Here against his will, apparently. And Wes Johnson.
Hey.
Or Wesley. I think last time we said it was Wes to your enemies and Wesley to your friends.
Right. I think this week it'll be different.
We flip it.
Right.
So how's everybody doing?
Very tired.
Yeah, it's late. Late for you, especially.
That's okay.
I hurt everywhere on my body.
You started running, right?
Yeah.
I saw that.
You started dubstepping.
I think that's kind of why I'm not very good at running, because I'm trying to dubstep while I do it.
I would do it.
Now, the dubstep workout, is that where you just step twice as long as you would from a normal step?
Yep, like a shortened version of double step.
Right.
I get it.
So what's prompted the running?
Me being a fat little piggy.
People chasing
part
you?
Of it. No, I'm not being chased. I'm just a chubby bunny.
That's one of my favorite things to do when I go to the park where people are running. A group of people run by, and then another group follows them shortly afterward. I like to think that the one group's chasing the other group.
They just can't keep up.
Right.
Do you do like a motivator thing, like tying a fishing rod to your back that's holding up a cake, so you're constantly running towards the cake?
No.
That's what I do.
That's
with because
beer, right?
Every time I've tried to do that, like tried to tie the cake to the fishing rod, I've eaten the cake.
Oh, no.
So
that'd be a problem.
You got to use shorter line.
See, you're supposed to, as soon as you stop, have the cake fall over and get ruined, so that you can't eat it. That's
but then it's floor cake, delicious floor cake.
Floor cake is the best kind of cake. For my birthday, my mom asked me what kind of cake I wanted. I said, I want floor cake, and it's got to be the dirtiest, nastiest floor you can find.
Exactly.
Those are toppings.
Don't throw those away.
If it was sponge cake, you could just use it to clean the floor.
Exactly. So is this your day one? Is that why you're in pain?
Yeah, this is my day one, and I lifted yesterday, which is also day one of that.
What did you lift?
I lifted sandwiches.
Xbox controller.
Yeah.
Sandwiches? No, I lifted weights.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Heavy objects.
Tom weights or like dumbbells?
I don't know what Tom Waits are.
Oh, really?
Tom Waits. There we go. Get it.
It took it a second. It's all those endorphins. There's too many of them. They're in your way now.
Well, he didn't have his lucky charms, so it's harder to think.
What's an endorphin?
Don't you get those from running?
I thought a dolphin was like those fish creatures.
Get it, dolphin?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
I'm there with you.
You were laughing, though.
I thought you were talking about Dorf going.
I'm grinning. I just wasn't.
Oh,
so I'm lost.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We are off the rails. You can't even see the rails anymore because the train crashed down a hill and fell into a lake.
Landed right on that joke I just made.
Episode 153 is what the show's going to be remembered for. I can already tell.
Yeah. I
like anyway,
it.
Yeah.
So that's cool. That's good. I should do something like that. Although running doesn't really work for me because my heart would explode.
It doesn't work for me either.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a good segue, guys. If you want to go out and kind of work out a little bit, but not run and hurt yourself, mm-hmm. pick up Code Runner on the iPhone. Cause that's one of the things I've been playing this week.
Yeah.
Super fun. And it gets you walking around your neighborhood. And basically it's a geocache sort of deal. Puts you in the middle of your very own spy movie. It's a game on iPhone, uses your GPS, you fire it up, and you have a handler speaking to you in your headphone saying, you know, get out of your location, this is you're being watched, blah, blah, blah. And then once you've walked a safe distance away from your house, he starts filling you in on the story. Basically, you've been recruited by a group called the Department of Privacy. And it's like a big brother's watching you sort of deal. You're helping them out. There's a phone hacker in your neighborhood who's gotten a phone from a authority figure of some sort. And you got to get near them, hack the phone, and, you know, do password stuff and pull data off that phone and then wipe it so no one else can see the data that's on the phone, upload it to a dead drop for report access and this and that. No one's really playing around me, so I had to do a lot of dead drops myself. You can create your own, but the thing is, the ones you create stay on the map so other gamers can come along and access your dead drops. Like in some of them serve a certain purpose, like that phone I just mentioned, it gets left in a cab during part of it, and the cabbie finds pawns it, and you have to pay off the cabbie to get the phone back. Well, you got to find an ATM dead drop to upload what's called an ATM ferret or something like that, and that transfers the money over to the hacker. And there are certain parts of it where you're telling somebody and you see his little blip on your map. And then there are other parts where people are telling you. So you got to run and get out of the area. And there's I remember one part offhand, there's a mention of a camera. The area you're in is covered by a camera. And you got a big red whelp on your screen. You got to get out of the red area so you can go back to normalcy. It's super fun. It's like $2 right now on sale. I think that's just for this week only. I don't know what it'll go up to after that. The guy who developed it, do you guys remember Tiki Bar TV, the web show?
It was like familiar.
Yeah, it was like one of the first video podcasts, and I think Steve Jobs actually used it to demonstrate the iPod video whenever that was first coming out. But the guy from that created this this game development company. I think they're called Rocket Chicken or something like that, and they're in on this. But yeah, it's a really cool game, and like when other people come along and access your dead drops, you get game center achievements. Whenever you travel a certain distance, you can get game center achievements. Like I think there's an achievement for going like 13 miles or something. Most of the stuff is walking distance. You can drive, but they don't encourage that.
It's too easy.
Right.
Does it let you, like, if you go to a new location, you could just start it over and it'd be its own, like, different?
There's actually a button. If the story itself, I think I played it for about 2 hours. I can't remember. Hour and a half, 2 hours, something like that. And I got through the story, but there's more collectibles. If you go to a new town, you can find other dead drops and pull other stuff down. But if you go to a new town and you want to continue the game you play, there's a button on there that says recalculate locations, and they kind of play it off like someone in the bureau got some information wrong or something. It's like, oh, I don't know who's responsible for this. Here, let me fix this for you. And then it adjusts your location, your mission points on your map to wherever you're at. I guess they have a certain amount of distance that they place them away from you. Here's one example toward the end game. Someone's tracking your location through Wi-Fi hotspots, and like all these blips come up on the map, supposedly routers, and I don't know if it's really sensing routers around you or not. I don't think that it is, because I kind of looked at the names that they gave and then the names that were on my iPhone list, and they didn't match up, but they did give them real realistic names like Wire 29 or whatever, stuff you see that are default names on routers. And you have to connect to three of these routers when this guy's scanning for your location, and you upload another ferret program that's to destroy a Wi-Fi location. You upload that to three of them, and you're in the clear. And there's like some cool stuff toward the end of it. I don't want to give anything away. It's like an anonymous group. They may be right, and you may be working for the wrong team and that sort of thing. Has a cliffhanger ending, but they have promised that they're going to put out more missions. And right now, it's only on iPhone. They said if they reach a certain milestone with it on that platform, then they will go to Android too. So nice. Yeah, I hope it does pretty well. It's definitely a cool, unique little game. I liked it a lot.
Is it considered an ARG, augmented reality game?
Have to like run around. If you trip and fall.
Yeah, exactly. I would equate it with that sort of thing. Yeah, it's definitely like that. Yeah, it's just super cool. It's one of the funnest experiences I've had on the iPhone.
I'm curious how it would differ, like doing it, you know, in a neighborhood versus like in a bigger city. Like if I were to then take it to Seattle or something and try
it there. Country,
right,
or another country. It says it works anywhere in the world.
No, I mean like in the country, like middle of nowhere.
Oh, it said they even say on
there. There's this cow out there that was playing it too.
Yeah. And well, you can with your dead drops, you can tag them as any sort of category. Like if you want to pretend something's an ATM, yeah. If you want to pretend a cow's an ATM, you can just tag it as an ATM. But the thing is,
I can do that for free.
Exactly.
This sounds kind of like one of those games you play on your kid. You're like, oh, the floor's hot lava.
Right. You know, it's more fun if you tag an ATM as an ATM, but if you don't have any of that stuff around you, you can tag it. There are some of the dead drops you need to go to that are like an electrical box. You got to hack some power, so something's got to be tagged as an electric box. And then, you know, if you go into a big city, odds are that more people are playing it, so there'll be already pre-existing dead drops.
It did say on their site, because you linked me to some info on it, it works better in a more heavily populated area. Like, they recommend if you live kind of in a rural area to go to, like, a shopping center or something, so that it's more interesting, and there's more chance of people like cross over with other players.
Right.
And yeah, see, I think that'd be fun to play like at PAX or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Other players. Yeah.
Yeah, it does two player, like multiplayer stuff doesn't get any more involved than, you know, having somebody access your dead drop or vice versa. And you do get, like I said, if one person accesses a dead drop that you created, you get achievements, but you also get more if like six people access it, or there might be one in there if you access someone else's or whatever. But yeah, I live in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. It's not a big town at all. I didn't have anybody playing me in my area, but I live near Louisville, which is a bigger city. There's several hundred thousand people in Louisville, so I'm hoping to try to start a new game there, you know, in a couple weeks or whenever I get up there, and see how that goes. So yeah, it's a fun little game. I thought I'd bring that up while we were on the subject of exercising and making it more tolerable.
Nice.
So I went out a couple nights in a row. It spent probably 40 minutes or so each time, and it
tracking how far you've gone, you said?
Yeah, it does.
It's, that's cool.
It's almost like a pedometer. You do get some achievements depending on how far you travel. Like they use the spy unit of measurement.
Not to be confused with a pedometer, which is something completely different.
You know, I made this observation once. You know, if an audiophile is someone who's into music and a bibliophile is someone who is into books, we should really think that naming convention for the sake of people who like pets.
Needs to be altered.
Right.
Otherwise, we're going to have some problems.
Weird. You have to really, really enunciate that T.
Indeed. But yeah, Code Runner, pick it up.
All right.
Okay. Cool.
You can snip that out and use it as a commercial, Jeff McPherson, if you want to.
Let's just put some like pretty calm, like little jazz music behind what you're saying. Just get the whole commercial vibe going.
Do that NPR voice. It's this portion of our broadcast is brought to you by Code Runner.
If only.
It's brought to you by Audible.
So Jesse.
What?
You're crazy then, huh? Another remix contest I hear?
So, what is it?
What's this one about?
It's the Dubstep Awesome App Remix Contest.
Wow, 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 wow.
No, this one is, you know how I did those Mega Man ones? Those various Mega Man remix competitions? Well, if you recall, the first one that I did was the bracketed elimination style, where, you know, you chose a robot master and you'd get pitted against different opponents and you'd have to mix your theme with theirs, and whoever got the most votes that round would move up in the bracket, and then have, you know, you'd stick with the same song but then have to mix it with a new song. Well, this is the exact same thing, only with Street Fighter characters. So
nice.
You pick a Street Fighter theme from any Street Fighter game in the series, as long as it's a character theme. It can't be like, you know how Street Fighter 4 has like stage themes that don't belong to a specific character. It can't be anything like that. But yeah, you can pick from any of those. So I signed up, and this is the drafting period right now. So I put in my five choices. I don't know which of them I'll get yet, but my top choice is the Street Fighter 2 Balrog theme. So I'm hoping to get that. This one, it's run by the same guy who's been running all of them, except for the difference with this one is that Capcom asked him to run it, and there's going to be, like, the music's going to be used in some sort of Street Fighter 25th anniversary thing of some sort, that there isn't actually any details on the usage of the music. So he kind of put a stricter limit on who could actually participate in it, but it was still a limit that I was within. And so I signed up, and there's, as of me talking right now, there's only one slot left, but I'm sure by the time that the show actually goes up, that slot will be filled.
Oh, man.
It's 16 total people, I believe, for the competition. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be, I believe, the same thing where it just, you know, like the other one was, where it's just like, you know, week-long rounds. I think the time limit is the same as the other ones.
Right.
But yeah, it should be pretty cool. I mean, you know, most of the stuff I picked was from Street Fighter 2, because that's such a freaking awesome, like, iconic soundtrack. That's where most of the tunes I know. But I threw a Third Strike thing in my draft choices as well.
Yes.
So we'll see. But yeah, I'm pretty stoked about that. I always enjoy signing up for things that force me to make more music.
You should do a mashup with the Tekken song.
I do actually like Tekken music quite a bit. A lot more than I like the games, actually. they got some pretty bumpin' electronica in the Tekken series.
I was looking down your list, and I was happy to see that Dudley is in there. So.
Yeah, he was my Third Strike pick.
Excellent.
He's always my Third Strike pick.
Exactly.
I don't know what that means, but yes.
We had one other thing that we wanted to mention before we get into normal video game discussion zone. And that is a friend of ours. You know how Kickstarter's the new thing for everything?
Kind of. I mean, it was the new thing in, like, what, 2009?
Something like that. But, I mean, lately, games have been using it a lot. Like, indie games for funding things. And we actually know a guy who's connected with one that actually sounds pretty sweet. The game is Heroes of Forevia. I think I'm saying that right. But anyway, they're kind of heavily inspired by Gauntlet Legends,
nice.
With the addition of being, it's going to have drop in, drop out multiplayer is kind of the idea.
Yeah, the big thing that they're going for is trying to create an online co-op game that feels like a local co-op game. That's
right.
Like their big, that's their whole design view. Trying to capture that sweet, sweet local spirit in the online world.
Exactly. So it sounds pretty cool. Is this their first game? It seemed like it was.
I don't know.
Okay.
Right. I mean, right now the staff is pretty much my buddy Jeff and then two other guys. It's a pretty small team, but I was talking to him earlier today, and he said that they have like quite a bit done already.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the funding has just started. Like, there's only a month to fund it, and it's like just getting going. So it doesn't have a ton of backers yet. But I know that they've already invested like at least $1,000 of their own money. And like I said, I guess they got like quite a bit done, like on the engine and whatnot.
Yeah, and they I was actually just following along with it, and they said, you know, because right now there's like an intro video with the two main dudes talking about it, and then they've gotten some feedback already asking to see more of the game, which I think will help the, you know, get more people interested if they show more of what they have done.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, like, I am going to participate in backing it only because that sounds rad, and we
know
a guy that's connected with it, so that always helps me, you know, want to help. But I think it actually sounds legitimately cool, because I played the crap out of that Gauntlet Legends with my friend Mike. There was a period where we had the N64 version, and we pretty much just played it nonstop.
Nice. I played Gauntlet for the first time this weekend at the arcade show thing I went to.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You should talk about that.
Sure.
That arcade show. That's a thing. That's a topic related to games that's interesting.
But so...
But before we move on...
Before we move on, go to Kickstarter and look for Heroes of Forevia, and you know, they have all the different price points. You know, you can do, you know, as low as like $5, or you can do I think $20 is the lowest to get an actual copy of the game, or $25.
No, $10 is the
lowest. Oh wow, yeah, I guess you can get a free copy of the game for as low as pledging $10.
$25, the next level above that gets you the game and like an exclusive in-game like item of some sort.
I did the $40 level just because it one, I want to help them out, but also two, it gives you an extra copy of the game, so I figured, assuming that they did get funding, then we could like give one away or something.
Oh yeah, that'd be rad.
Yes, $50 pledge gets you a full body massage and all that.
Oh snap!
Nice. Yeah, we should do like a news post or something too, just to kind of get the word out. Because, like I said, not only do we know a guy connected with it, but it sounds rad. So
You should get him on the show.
He's been on the show once, but we could maybe
bring him back.
Yeah, he's pretty not awkward. Jesse can attest to. He's like one of our closest friends, so I can bust his chops a little bit.
Sweet.
Anyway, so Wes, now that we're done shilling for some guys that we kind of know and a friend, then you went to that arcade retro thingy. What was that
right.
about?
That was about arcade retro thingies.
Nice.
Yeah.
This was the Louisville one, right?
Right. Louisville.
Louisville. I don't know how to talk.
Yeah, that's all right. People are often confused about how to say the town name. In fact,
Jesse actually thinks that King Louis runs it from the Jungle Book.
Right.
That is my understanding. I mean, is that not the case?
No, it's true.
Okay. Have two bananas.
It's actually the dark secret is that it's actually true.
And if you tell anyone.
But yeah, like there, if you've seen the movie Elizabethtown, which I live in Elizabethtown, Right. No, there's a little bit in there where they heard Orlando Bloom and Kirsten Dunst are going back and forth about how to pronounce Louisville correctly. And that's part of the city slogan, sort of. They have that on some of the posts. But anyway, basically, yeah, there was a Louisville Arcade Expo. This, I believe, is the second year that they've had it. And it's kind of like California Extreme, which you all have probably heard of. A hotel conference center full of old arcade games, old consoles, and old computers. You pay X amount to get in. You can play for free the whole day. There's lots of tournaments. There was Mega Ran played on Friday, which I was bummed out because I didn't find that out until after the fact. Only went on Saturday. Yeah, the night that I was there, they had like two panels. I only went to one of them, and it was Mark Allpiger, which you guys might remember as the really skinny, runny guy from King of Kong. he was the nice one, though, and he's from Louisville, which I had no idea. But yeah, he spoke a bit about Classic Arcade. He runs a website, classicarcadegaming.com, I think, or something like that. And he spoke a bit about that in the movie. But yeah, the star of the show was definitely the video games. And there was all kinds of pinball. I played Ted Nugent pinball, which I was kind of taken aback by the fact that the Ted Nugent pinball existed. The handle wasn't a shotgun of any sort, and you weren't shooting at animals. It was basically a standard pinball. It was one of the older, I don't remember if it was Gottlieb that did that. It was one of the older tables, though, before pinballs, pinball machines, before their entire goal was to give you an epileptic seizure.
Right. So unfortunately, had it come out post the Terminator 2 pinball game, it would have been very different, is what
right,
you're saying.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I was hitting some of these pinball. I played a lot of the older ones. There's a Pac-Man pinball machine, which I hadn't seen before. And there was like an old James Bond one.
Is that different than Pac-Man Jr.? Or is that... Or is it
no,
just
it's
Pac-Man?
Just yeah, it's a standard Pac-Man pinball machine. No,
because
no
Pac-Man Jr. was that weird like hybrid pinball slash video game.
No,
where, like,
this
the
was,
top screen's a video game and the bottom is a pinball.
No, this is just a straight up pinball machine.
Huh.
And there was like an old James Bond, an old Doctor Who, and Doctor Who was really cool because it was kind of stuck in the middle of being like the older pinball and the newer one. So some of the epileptic stuff was there, but it wasn't as rebellion as in like Jurassic Park, which I had to stop playing the Jurassic Park pinball machine because my eyes started hurting.
Started throwing up uncontrollably.
Yeah, exactly. They had pinball tournaments too, but I'm not that good at pinball. I like to think that I am, but I did have fun hopping around from machine to machine. There was, I think, the first one I played of the night was a Space Invaders pinball. So there's quite a few like older games brought over to the pinball world.
Did you get any free games? Because when you're like you or I, where you're, you know, not great at it, when you do eventually get a free game, you feel like the king of the world.
Well, I like to pretend that I did, but I pretty much just always would hit to start the new game because they had the free play button on there.
Oh, right, right.
I played Ladybug for the first time, which is essentially Pac-Man, but there's it's more of a challenge because you gotta flip walls around. Have you guys ever played Ladybug?
I'm aware of it. I don't think I've ever actually played it.
It's set up like a Pac-Man board, but there's no like power pellets that allows you to eat the enemy, so you just pretty much gotta avoid them. But you can like switch wall positions around, so it adds a little bit more of a challenge. Gauntlet, I played. The Gauntlet machine was in pretty rough shape. Most of these machines were for sale. A lot of them were, but some of them weren't. But I think the Gauntlet was for sale, but good luck finding anybody to pay any kind of money for it because it was pretty much wrecked. I'm trying to think of what else I played. I hopped around to some many arcade machines. I can't really remember all the stuff that I hit on. I, of course, played, you know, Pac-Man and Donkey Kong and that sort of thing. But one of the coolest aspects of the whole show to me was the fact that they had like tables of old consoles and old computers set up. I got to play Karateka, the original, on an Apple II. And I played around, I think, with some Amiga stuff. They had like a whole thing. They even had a dot matrix printer set up that you could print stuff on. And I jumped over to some of the consoles, played some Dreamcast stuff, and there was a really good top-down shooter that I played. It's something Wings. Jesse, you might can help me out with this. It was definitely your kind of game. Something Wings, it was like an odd word. And like basically you're doing like bullet hell stuff, and occasionally your spaceship will turn into like an angel, and you have these giant angel wings and a halo coming above it. Ringing any bells?
I was actually interested
in looking into getting this one, and it may have been there were some Japanese games there too. There was like a dodgeball game that I played on some console. I have no idea what it was, and it was all in Japanese.
This was like a shmup.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
Did you see a Major Havoc arcade machine? Because that's one I'm very interested to try if I can ever find it at one of these shows.
I didn't see that one.
That's that crazy vector graphics, but it like has multiple styles of play, but it kind of zooms seamlessly between them thanks to the that graphic style.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that one.
I've watched videos of it. It's pretty crazy. You're like you're flying around in space, and then you'll go land, and it just kind of like zooms in. So it's like space combat, like a shmup type of thing, but kind of, you know, minimal. And then you'll land on a planet, and it has kind of like a lunar lander type thing, landing your ship, and then your guy will jump out, and then it's like a Pac-Man maze. It's like it's super crazy. I've never actually gotten to play it though, but it looks really cool.
No, I don't remember seeing that one. But I did get to play Zelda on CDR.
Nice.
Which was just wonderful.
How did that go?
Oh, not very well.
Do you know which of the like three or whatever that you played?
Oh, I didn't know there were. I didn't know there were more than one. The clips that we watched earlier, I think it was from that. Unless they all look that way.
I want to say that that one's Wand of Gamelon, but
one of them FMV.
I think that's right. I think Wand of Gamelon.
Yeah, at least one of them has FMV.
Yeah, right. One of them you play as Zelda.
Wand of Gamelon is the one that I think all the internet memes are from.
Because it's the crazy cartoon.
It's the one that looks like it was done in MS Paint. Well, cutscenes do.
That's it.
Gameplay is like if Zelda 2 was made in Game Maker for Windows 95.
that's exactly it, and it was not fun at all. I had a heck of a time figuring out what to do, so I walked away from that one pretty quickly. But on that same table, though, was Demolition Man for the 3DO.
Nice.
I'd never played 3DO before, but that one was pretty rough. Like, it makes me want to do an IMR just to movie license the games.
Oh, yeah.
There was some really like bad footage shot. It was like Sylvester Stallone, but you could tell it was shot specifically for the game because it was very low quality.
That's one of the ones where they did the like Mortal Kombat style capturing people, right?
Sort of. Well, it's like... Yeah, I guess you could say that, but it's like a shooter, and they didn't have a light gun. I don't know if there was a light gun for the 3DO or not, but they just had a traditional controller with it, so I used that. I bounced around to so many games. I really wish I had written down some of the stuff I played. It was a lot of fun. I'm definitely going to go back next year. They had some tournaments. Like there was like one part of the area was set up to look like someone's living room from the 80s. I just slipped into my Kentucky Dalek and said living room, sorry. But it had like old VCRs and a Nintendo, and they had Mario set up on that, and they either had tournaments there or drawings there, but most of the tournaments were done like actually projected onto the walls. And I took a photo that kind of summed up the evening quite well. I think it was two guys playing Dr. Mario on a wall, one of which had exposed butt crack. It's like that's what it's all about right there.
He was too busy playing Dr. Mario to pull those pants up.
Exactly. It was a very nice evening. They had tables with vendors with old games. Like I picked through them. There was some pretty good looking stuff there. I was kind of looking for Dreamcast games or Captain Novalin. I really want to own a copy of Captain Novalin, but I didn't see any of that. But they did have a lot of good stuff there. I didn't walk away with anything. They had affordable food. That's one of the great things about Southern hospitality, I guess, and their conventions. The food is reasonably priced. I got a good sized slice of pizza. The Wick's Pizza is a local joint in Louisville, and super good pizza. Got that and a drink for $5. You know, that's not going to happen at PAX.
No.
Right.
No, I did, absolutely not.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed at the lack of panels. I hope that's something they put more time into. I actually talked to Mike about putting in to see if we could get a Fistful of Pixels live panel. Should be kind of fun. Yeah, there wasn't too many panels, and the band that played there was a chiptunes guy that I saw. He played that the night that I was there, and he was not any good. His name was David Henry or something like that. You know, his musically it was all right. You know, he was doing the basic DJ thing, and the music didn't sound too bad. But he gets to one point where he speaks of a band that he's in. I don't remember what the name of the band is off the top of my head, but he said they were on a Mortal Kombat tribute CD. Jesse, are you familiar with the Mortal Kombat tribute CD?
No.
It's like his favorite disc.
Right.
I know the Mortal Kombat movie soundtrack because it's got that Mortal Kombat.
No, this is a, this is a, bunch of people paying homage to Mortal Kombat and song. And he said that, you know, even though his band wasn't there that night, he wanted to do a song that they did for the CD. And it's called Chinese Ninja Warrior. It's a tribute to Sub-Zero. Oh, okay. And he had a guy come up and sing the parts with him. I guess, you know, he doesn't really sing. He just does DJ stuff. But I wanted to read you some Chinese Ninja Warrior lyrics.
Oh, boy.
So
how racist are these? Am I going to have to bleep them?
Right. No. Let me take a drink real quick. Of alcohol, so I don't feel as embarrassed about reading these lyrics. Whoa, Chinese Ninja Warrior, with your heart so cold. Sub-Zero. Whoa, your life's a mystery. Why you wear the mask? Sub-Zero, yeah, freezing vibrations. Yeah, yeah, freezing vibrations. Yeah, freezing vibrations. Here we go. Whoa, Chinese Ninja Warrior, with your heart so cold. Sub-Zero, whoa, your life is a mystery. Why you wear the mask? Sub-Zero, yeah, freezing vibrations. So on and so forth until the end of the song. But they do change
until
it up
the end of the
end.
Song when they go, oh my God, call 911.
No, at the end of the song, at the end of this one, they actually go, and then it ends.
Huh.
So yeah, it's a very well written song, and I really got a little choked up emotionally.
Sounds good.
As I walked out to do something else.
Okay.
Not big on the music, but yeah, there's room to grow, but it's a good little startup con. I can see it going places. There's really nothing like California Extreme or anything out this way without going all the way up to Chicago.
Well, even that retro one that Jesse and I went to here in Seattle was pretty small. Like, there, unless you were really active in some of the tournaments, there wasn't a ton to see. There was a ton of vendor bins to dig through, but it was mostly one of those, unless you were kind of looking for that stuff. I mean, there was a free play room that was kind of fun. We actually got to play Power Blade 2, which we'd never seen in person before.
Nice.
Took some getting, some lots of trying to even get it to run, but we got it.
Yeah.
But that one you went to actually kind of sounds cooler even than the one we went to, as far as like having a lot of stuff just set up for you to try.
Right. And yeah, I was like $35 for the whole weekend. I just went on one day and I was like 15, and it's like free play all day, cheap food. And one of the most shocking aspects of the whole event was the fact that really no one smelled bad.
Wow.
I mean, it was you usually think arcade, fat, sweaty people.
Yeah.
Didn't really happen. There were some overweight people there, but they smelled all right.
Yeah, like, they showered that morning.
Yeah, the guy in front of me at the Lord of the Rings pinball games, hair smelled exquisite.
Yeah, nice. Well, I guess I was just checking while we were talking, because I was curious. Last time I checked for the Seattle Retro Gaming Expo, was the official name of that one, it still hadn't updated. It was still all the info from last year, but apparently they just finally updated their site, and it's going to be June 16 and 17. But this year it's in Bellevue for some reason.
Oh, nice.
Way to call it the Seattle Retro Gaming Expo, guys.
Greater Seattle area. cosplay was there too a little bit.
Really?
Yeah. There were two girls dressed as Assassin's Creed assassins with exposed midriffs. Right, it doesn't really make any sense, because if you got an exposed midriff, that's where the blade's going first when someone comes at you.
Well, that's where everyone's going to be looking is the problem.
Especially if your midriff is as large as the one girl's who had one of the suits on.
If they're looking at your tummy, they can't see your blade.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
They're like, look at the tum-tum on that girl over there. Oh!
I'm being murdered. What's happening?
or maybe the blade come out of her navel. She's got a hidden under there. She just juts out her stomach. Boom, you're dead. But yeah, if you guys want to get more information, if you're actually in the Midwest area, this is worth driving a couple hours for, I would think. Arcade RX. Yeah, that's a confusing URL. But it's pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet. I'll definitely be going back.
Nice.
Dum dum.
I have that. I could queue it up. So I guess we should talk about some games, some more games that we played. Street Fighter Cross Tekken came out finally.
Hey, that's a good game.
And it's pretty good.
Hey.
Jesse and Mike probably played it a lot more than I did.
I was playing it right before we started the show.
Yeah. I played enough to know that I like it a hell of a lot more than MVC3.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I am sad to say that I just didn't like MVC3 nearly as much as I wanted to.
Yeah, same here.
But I am really liking Street Fighter X Tekken. like maybe a little too much.
Do you say X or cross? When
oh,
you
sorry, it's cross. It's cross. Okay. It's
just... I was like, they didn't change that.
No,
almost,
no, no.
Did they?
It's just me saying it wrong. Don't worry. Don't you worry.
I feel like they made this game in such a way it like it plays mostly like Street Fighter 4. But I feel better than I actually am. Because they've, like, they feel like, it feels like they've just, like, widened the cancel windows for things. And, like, they tried to make it, like, more about, like, long combos than I feel like Street Fighter 4 was. Unless you were really good at Street Fighter 4, which I'm not.
It feels.
Combos.
Feels a little faster to me.
Yeah. Nacho cheese and pretzel combos.
Okay. Yes. Delicious.
Yeah, it's definitely faster.
But yeah, it's like it's an interesting middle ground between like the more grounded Street Fighter 4 and the crazier like other verse games, because it's not nearly as crazy as like an MVC, but yeah. it's still like, you know, you'll be mid combo and then switch to another character and then like finish a combo, which is really the only way you should switch characters, because
yeah.
If you switch characters normally, you leave yourself massive. Vulnerable.
This isn't the first time they've had a tag Street Fighter game, is it? Though, like the EX series, didn't that?
I have never played an EX game.
They're not good.
No, that's why I avoided them.
I haven't played one because I've never heard anybody say they are.
Right.
I'm amazed they made multiples of those.
Oh yeah, they made at least three.
Yeah.
They looked kind of good. Like, I mean, they don't hold up. Like, don't go look at them and, you know, because I said that they looked good. But I mean, at the time, you know, seeing sweet Hadoukens and Shoryukens and in beautiful eye popping 3D was kind of a novelty. But other than that, the game wasn't any good.
Yeah. But no, this is really cool. I like how there's a lot of mechanics that are instituted the same way across all characters. Like how, you know, if you want to do like the super move that involves both characters that takes all of your bar, you know, it's, you always do it the same way.
Right.
So it's like, it seems like because there's a lot of mechanics like that I have an easier time just kind of using like just random people on the roster and still having a bunch of fun.
Yeah, and they implemented a lot of ways to simplify the input even further. I know, like, through like the gems, you can use. There's penalties, of course, but you can use assist gems to where, like, if you're having trouble doing that quarter circle forward to input for like doing like the character super arts, you can switch it to where all you have to do is hit forward and all three punches or all three kicks or whatever or backwards.
Right, but it's like a minus something percent attack.
Right, you don't do quite as much damage. That's a lot easier to put in.
I've played for 3 or 4 nights at this point, and it was really only tonight where I finally started really delving into the whole gem system thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the stuff people were complaining about seemed really silly, because like, so I know I saw like people before the game release being like, oh, there's an auto block gem. It's like, yeah, each time somebody were to use that, it takes an entire like block of energy. It's like, that seems terrible.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're fighting against somebody who has that, they're probably going to lose. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. but yeah, there's just like a lot of stuff like that. Like, and then another complaint I saw was like, oh, but the pre-order gems from certain places are gonna be all like more powerful, but they take multiple slots, so who cares?
Wait, there's pre-order gems?
Yeah, but like they take like the, it doesn't, it's not like an I win equipment, because I did an Amazon pre-order, so I just got like a code for like a few extra gems or whatever, and it's like, pretty much all the ones I got take 2 slots.
Yeah.
So it's, and you only have 3 slots. So it's like, even if what the gem does is like slightly better, it's in place of you using 2 gems. So who cares?
Oh. Gotcha.
You know?
I liked how Bob, I think is the fat guy's name, was, yeah, when I lost as him, he was like, no, my perfect body. And then the best part of this was that after the match, both guys on the other team in the dialogue mentioned that he said that and were making fun of it.
Yeah.
I appreciated that quite a bit. Jesse and I were both like cracking up to that. That was amazing.
There's
lots of little touches like that that I appreciate.
I thought the kind of a cool thing was that if you're doing, like, say you're doing arcade mode, if you do certain teams actually have a little bit deeper story.
Oh, every single, like, maybe except for Akuma and Ogre, because they're, like, the bosses. I don't know if they're a team, but everybody else there is, like, a specific team that will have a an actual video when you win and make it so that between each match it's actually like custom story dialogue instead of just random I beat up a guy dialogue.
Nice. And the only time you do the fight your rival thing is if you've got one of those teams.
Right.
The thing that was weird to me is that the game kind of makes you guess what those teams are. Unless you like look it up on a website, you don't know.
Really, they're all next to each other.
Are they all?
Yeah,
all right.
I've
they
actually
don't really
been
tell
doing
you that though. I mean, like,
no,
I
no, they might not tell that it to you, but I've actually been doing arcade mode exclusively with teams, except for like the first night, and I haven't had to look it up because they're all right next to each other. So it's like, if you start from, you know, the center where it, you know, switches over from, you know, Street Fighter to Tekken, then yeah, you can always just go one character to the left from there, and it'll be a team.
I still feel like, I mean, there really needs to be something like more clearly stating that than just, oh, they're right next to each other, because you got to figure that out still. And obviously I didn't, and, you know, maybe that just means I'm dumb, but like, you know, like, you know, it just seemed to me like
the most
like
of them
there should have been some
sense,
sort of a
like Ken Ryu.
Well,
type of thing.
I'm not a Tekken player though, so I don't know anything. True.
There's
about
there, yeah, there's Ken Ryu, there's Chun Li and Cammy. You know, there's to a certain extent. I mean, I think some of them get a little weird. Like, I don't know about Ibuki and Rolento. But
Sagat Dalsim, that doesn't make
sense. Yeah, that was a weird one.
But I don't know, they both kind of have weird eyes, I guess.
Yeah, that's what we noticed.
Heihachi
like
and a bear.
Thread.
That, you know, that makes sense.
Bear. I mean, come on.
Yeah, of course. Clearly.
Who's Yoshimitsu go with?
That crazy ninja guy who I can't remember his name because I'm not a Tekken guy.
It's probably like Bob or Steve. Bob's already used, but a lot of those guys have such weirdly normal names to offset the guys with the really crazy names.
Hi, it's Jeff. How's it going?
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I am surprised at how much I am enjoying the Tekken characters because I'm really not a Tekken guy at all. But it seems like they've Street Fightered them up quite a bit.
It's the game's largely Street Fighter with a bunch of new characters.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, I was actually when I was watching just some video before it came out, it was funny to me because there's so many people in the comments section saying, "Yeah, I was planning on getting this, but it looks like it's more Street Fighter than anything." It's like, do you guys know that they're coming out with a Tekken version of this as well? Like,
or
do not get what's happening
as long
here?
As they didn't cancel it. It's been a while since we've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, they, like, when someone finally was like, hey, how come we haven't seen any Tekken Cross Street Fighter? They finally admitted, oh, that's not even in, like, pre-production yet. And that it was months ago when that happened.
Nice.
But it was long enough into this whole process that I was shocked to hear that.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is why there hadn't been any screenshots. But I have a feeling what they wanted to do was get all the promo and all the stuff out of the way for this one so that they could start promoting the next one.
Out.
Why didn't they just have a little checkbox in the option screen where you can make check here for Street Fighter Cross Tekken, check here for Tekken Cross Street Fighter.
It's just a little checkbox that changes all the mechanics.
All it does is it switches the logo around.
Right.
Oh, there you go.
Now, does this have like control mode for Tekken people SNK used to?
No, instead of doing that, it just makes it, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but it seems like both Street Fighter and Tekken characters seem to have Street Fighter and Tekken style moves.
I noticed that like the Tekken players have a lot of like stances, like a lot of, or like there, it's like, you know, if you do like the forward down down forward, if you do that motion as Jin, he does this little like dash forward, and then depending on what you input while he's doing that, it'll actually end up being a completely different move, which kind of seems, I mean, essentially what that means is, you know, now it just means that he has a bunch of different moves that use that same control motion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just.
Well, I was just thinking, like. What? Sorry, what?
No, go ahead.
Okay, I was just thinking, like, you can, I mean, you can go into a command list and you can see, like, you know, what's called, I think special arts or super arts, the ones that are not, the ones that don't actually take bar. And, you know, you can see those for both characters, and those are a lot of your quarter circle type things and whatnot. Right. But then you can also go to the unique attack section, and you can see a lot of the more Tekken-style inputs, like the, you know, this button, then a direction, then this other button, you know, type of things. And it's like, I'm not saying, like, Street Fighter characters didn't have some of that stuff going on, but I don't remember them ever being in command lists before, at least.
Yeah, but I mean, there's always been different hits. Like, I mean, Ryu do that like overhead punch if you're doing like forward and high punch or whatever. I mean, like they've always
a little bit, yeah. But I mean, like these are big lists though. Like these are more like almost like combo lists,
right? I don't know. I mean, just judging from the characters that I've played in other Street Fighter games, I haven't really noticed much difference from the way they behaved before. Like, Rolento always was like that in the Alpha series.
Well, I know, like, there's definitely some differences. Because I know, like, Chun-Li, for example, I was using her, like, a lot today. And I'm not 100% sure what it exactly it is. But, like, I am enjoying using her a lot more than I did in Street Fighter 4.
Right.
And I know there's some interesting things like her, the one that she does with all the fast kicks. It has, like, a super long name. Instead of just being like hit kick a bunch of times, it's like a quarter circle forward and then hit kick a bunch of times. Like there's a lot of like tweaks like that, but like it also seems to kind of work better too.
Yeah.
But yeah, like there are certain characters who I used a lot in Street Fighter 4 that I just like, I like them better in Street Fighter X Tekken, and I haven't put my finger on why on all of them, but yeah, there's just there definitely have been tweaked quite a bit, even the characters that have been in other games this generation.
You know, and that's kind of the thing. There's, I mean, I kind of feel a little bit the opposite, and maybe that's just because I haven't had enough time to get used to the new timing for certain moves that I'm like so used to being able to pull off like second nature in Street Fighter 4.
Sure.
And now, you know, now I'm having issues.
Well, and that, and you know, that actually goes hand in hand with what you're saying. Like, that the very first night I got it, me and Jonah popped in and we're just screwing around, and I chose Chun-Li and I did terrible because I hadn't learned her differences.
Right.
And then like today I kind of went in her with like the what do you call it? The trials mode where it, you know, you frame by frame, it kind of goes and teaches you how to do each of their specials and combos and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And then I went and was like playing online. And right now online, I've kind of been just sticking with the Chun-Li and Cammy team. Because Cammy, I played a lot online in Street Fighter 4, and Chun-Li, I usually only like her in the crazier verse games, but and not as much in like Street Fighter 4 and Street Fighter 2 and stuff.
Yeah,
but something about the way that she works in Street Fighter X Tekken is just it just really works for me.
Sure, sure,
sure it does. Sure it does.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I'm sure. No, also, I get what you're saying, though.
Yeah, I also really, really love co-op.
That was way more fun than I thought it would be.
I don't know if you've gotten to try that yet, Mike.
I have not. I've just been playing alone in my basement and amid the tears.
Weeping softly. But no, because you know how when you do the combo where you switch characters, there's like that little bit of slow-mo zoom in?
Yeah.
That gives you just enough time to be like, oh, now my character's coming in. Let me finish this combo.
Yeah.
Unless you're not switching that way. Like, unless you're using a bar to do the quick swap in the middle of like just any other combo.
Same,
you know what I'm talking about? If you hit medium punch and medium kick at the same time, and you've got one bar, you can use that up to like have them run in while you're still doing that combo.
That takes a bar?
Yeah, that takes a bar.
If you're doing
a regular swap, if you're just standing, no, it doesn't take a bar. But if you're doing it in the middle of a combo, then yeah, they'll take a bar, and then you can run in and actually keep comboing the other character without having to do that, like, that high punch or high kick. Like,
oh, without having to do it, it takes a bar. Okay, I was going crazy for a second there.
Right.
I have been just doing the, you know, where you kind of scale upwards in power as you're doing your combo, and then at the end of that you switch. That doesn't take a bar. And that's what I thought you were talking about.
No,
and so that
no,
really confused me for a second there. But no,
like,
I mean, if
the other
I mean,
way, then you don't have any sort of time. I mean, it's just you got to know that it's coming.
Well, that's the thing is, like, most of the time, you know, you're doing that scaling and power one, and it does that little zoom, and then the other person's like, okay, this zoom, this little slow mo is happening now. I know that I'm going to finish the combo, and then any time that we weren't going to do that, then it would just be like, I'm about to switch. Which,
yeah, even then,
it could
always,
be, even then,
you're
it
like,
could
oh crap,
tricky.
And
you'd have, like, well, there was like one time
you'd be off making a sandwich, and
well, they have like the Pandora mode where you sacrifice the current character to make the other character more powerful for a very brief amount of time,
yeah,
before
very
losing.
Brief.
Very brief. But anyway, like when we were playing co-op, I tried that once, and basically, because I had like zero health, and I was basically just like, I'm going to Pandora. and then you know, you die, and then your partner is all glowy. But yeah, that's another thing, like, I really like how Pandora is only useful for extremely specific circumstances,
right?
So it's like, it doesn't feel overpowered at all, because it most of the time will just mess you up. Because yeah, you have a very, very limited time before you just completely lose.
Yeah, I really
after
feel
you
like,
activate Pandora.
I really feel like the things that they added to Street Fighter Cross Tekken to make it more accessible are, like, you know, just leagues ahead of the stuff that they added to Street Fighter 4 to make it more accessible, like the ultra combos.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that gauge, I never liked that system at all.
The revenge.
Or the revenge.
Or
yeah, there you go. Yeah, like, it just seemed to me like, you know, the only way that you could get those is if you, you know, just kind of let yourself get beat up on for a while.
Right.
And, like, you know, it's this way, I feel like, you know, they give you things to make it easier, but they also, there's also, you know, a very obvious drawback to using them.
Oh, yeah. Actually, a great example of that is there's that, this is one of the mechanics I constantly forget even exists, but there's the quick combo system,
right,
where if you hit, I think, like, a weak kick and a strong punch or vice versa at the same time, it will execute a, like, predefined combo, but it takes a bar. And so, again, it's like one of those things where it can help somebody who's not as good, like, pull something off, but
right,
somebody who is just better at the game can do that for free.
You can also click the sticks to do that, which is nice.
I can't click in an arcade
stick. Oh, yeah, arcade stick. Yeah, sorry.
I could try, but I would not be successful.
Push it really hard until you hear a snap.
Good times. But yeah, one of the funny things about Pandora is that time still goes when you're doing a super special art. So, like, you can't, like, because one of the perks of Pandora is, like, oh, full special bar. So clearly I could just enter Pandora and then do my super special if they had low health. But nope, not unless they have, like, really, really low health, because you have to KO.
So you can die in the middle of a...
Yes. Yes, you can.
Even in,
yes,
like, a really
have.
Sweet, in the middle of a sweet animation, like.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've done it. Believe me, I've done it.
That reminds me of which one? Like, maybe Mortal Kombat Deception. Like, was that the one where you could impale the other person, and like Sub-Zero would, like, stick his sword through me? I was playing as Scorpion, and I had a sword stuck through my chest, and you're slowly losing life when you're impaled. And so I did, like, Scorpion's spear, and, like, he was like, get over here, and as soon as he pulled the guy to him, he just fell over dead.
Nice. But yeah, totally, like, so you enter Pandora and you have this little timer that starts, which I forget, it's like 8 seconds or something really brief, and, you know, you're like enhanced power, you have full special, whatever. And, you know, I've done it where I enter a super special and, like, the first hit or two is enough to kill the guy and then I win the round. But I've also done it where, you know, I need, like, that third or fourth hit in the, like, super special animation, and I don't get to it in time.
Well, at that point, if they've got that little health, is, like, the super special even, I mean,
no,
was Pandora
idea.
Even worth it? I mean,
well,
you could have just...
Pandora can be worth it. Can be. Oftentimes is not, but can be. But super special seems to usually be a bad idea.
Yeah.
It seems like you're usually better off just doing, like, EX attacks, which are, I guess we didn't mention those, but those basically basically work exactly like they did in
Street Fighter. Oh, yeah, those are no different.
It's just, you just hit two buttons instead of one, and it takes a bar, and you do a more powerful version.
Except charging is kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about charging.
Which is not charging as in hold back and then hit forward and do a move like previous games. It's like if you're doing, say, Ryu, if you're doing a Hadouken, you can do like just normal, just like doing a Hadouken, except you hold the button down, and then he'll charge it, and you know, at first it'll just be a normal Hadouken. If you hold it a little longer, it'll be an EX. If you hold it even longer, it'll be a super, and it takes no bar.
Yeah. It obviously, people are going to pick up on that you're doing it, and because it takes a while, but right. It can still be, in certain situations, it can still be super useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even online. Actually, I was having a surprising amount of luck. I must have been like matched with people who were as crappy as I am, because I was actually getting like a decent amount of wins online. And even then, like, they're, you know, it's not like one of those things where it's a mechanic they added but it's completely useless. Like, it actually has a lot of situations where it's legitimately useful, even though it like takes a bit.
And you can get like an EX off quick enough,
right? Because, you know, that takes like half the time as charging up a super from it.
Right, it's useful in that, like, you might want to use an EX for something, but you're also saving up your bar for a super or for your cross art or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I've run into a couple of situations where it's been advantageous to do that.
Yeah, and then there's also another mechanic that I often forget exists is the one where you call both characters in at once.
Oh, the cross arts?
Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
It's when you have all three bars, because like if you want to perform like a super special, you actually only need two bars. But if you want to do, you know, the move where both people, you know, kind of come in and do a super like animated move, it takes three bars. But then there's a second thing that you can do with all three bars, which is if you do like quarter circle back and the partner buttons, then you'll just be controlling both characters simultaneously and beating up on the guy.
I completely forgot about that. Something different. I don't think that's called a cross eye.
Cross-eyes is the normal like animation one, right?
Right.
So I imagine, me and Jonah didn't try this, but I imagine if you were playing two player, then if you did that, whatever that one's called, then you would both be controlling each of the characters at the same time for a brief amount of time, I would imagine.
That's kind of like Alpha 3 had like a mode where you could do like 2-on-1 battles,
mm-hmm.
which is the worst idea. Because
well, this one has kind of that too in the scramble battle, which I haven't tried yet. Because there's that, you know, on Street Fighter X Tekken has that, what's it called, scramble battle, I think, where it's four people simultaneously fighting, which sounds like madness.
Yeah, that sounds awful, but awesome at the same time.
That sounds like the get a bunch of friends with some beers and have some chaotic fun kind of thing.
We used to do, like, in Alpha 3, we'd take Chun-Li on both sides and just do her kick constantly. You get up to, like, 99 hit combos, and that's where it would max out. Because the guy would just be stuck between you.
Nice. Oh, good times.
Yeah. So yeah, okay. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm liking fun. It quite a bit.
Yeah, it's starting to be my fighter of choice, actually, over Street Fighter 4. Still not more than Street Fighter 3, but it's definitely leaning in the right direction. I feel like it's a lot more technical, which is kind of what I was hoping out of Street Fighter 4.
It even kind of has like something that's mildly similar to parry.
Right, yeah, which I always forget to use.
Yeah, you can tell this is the first week that it came out, because there's these mechanics that I keep forgetting exist. But yeah, there's like if you're blocking and then you hit forward and both heavies, I believe, at the same time, spend a bar, and I forget if it makes you do a move or if it makes your partner come in and do a move. But
you do a move.
Okay, but yeah, it basically gets you out of a tight spot.
You pretty much cancel the block to do like, you know, whatever move. It's kind of like tech blocking, except tech blocking, I feel like, could happen on accident.
Uh-huh.
This could never happen on accident.
Yeah,
you have to be intentionally trying to do that.
Right, for sure. But yeah, like the other thing too is like, I know, you know, there's kind of like some people that are kind of like, they're already making the 12 more characters in fall thing, and it's like, we got 38 right now. Like,
yeah, that's, I saw a thing, somebody was complaining about how these characters are already included on the disc, like, right, the DLC characters, and it's like, yeah, I get it that you feel like you're being cheated out of content that was ready when they shipped the game. But at the same time, dude, you have not worked your way through all those characters yet.
Yeah, like, when did a 38 character, like, actual technical fighter become an incomplete package? That's what I want to know. Because, like, I'm not talking, like, MVC 2 with their, like, 50-some characters that were all ripped from other games and balanced horribly. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, like, 38 actual, you know, technical fighter characters. That's a big roster.
I think the draw for this game for me isn't the fact that it's like a crossover with Tekken, because I honestly, like, haven't played or cared about a Tekken since 3, and even then just loosely. Uh-huh. But the fact that now you've got all these characters that have never been in a Street Fighter game, like a huge selection of brand new characters to the series.
Yeah, and like I said before, it's like, you know, they're very infused with Street Fighter style, even though they retain a lot of, like, Tekken combos that they had in their respective games. Like, a Street Fighter person can, you know, can use them and, like, be like, hey, this feels pretty good, because that's what's happening to me right now.
Yeah. So, top notch.
Hey, why don't we take a break, and we'll come back and talk about more stuff. So we want to start talking about Mass Effects.
Sure. Mike will show up when he shows
He'll
up.
He'll show up. Apparently. Well, he said he's not. He doesn't have anything to say.
Fair enough.
So, about
Is he not a Mass Effect fan?
Hey, yo, guys, my mic's been on mute for a long time. I'm going to tell you what. Sometimes I would say something, and then you guys would laugh, but it must have been about a joke that you thought of or a video that you were watching, because I thought it was about me. It wasn't because I'm on mute.
I was imagining the jokes that you might be saying, and it was pretty good. Probably better than the jokes you actually said.
How many fart noises were there?
At least one from Wes.
Okay. Well, no, like in the jokes of mine that you imagined.
17.
That's exactly right.
All
right. We have a connection, you and I.
Yeah.
He's a fart psychic.
Oh, that is the worst power.
Yeah.
Make a reality show about it.
The fart whisper.
You know, all those times that they're silent, not to you.
Yeah. Still deadly, though.
Well, they're always deadly to everyone.
I see dead farts.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, no, I've got nothing to say about Mass Effect, though.
Okay. So, are you ready, Wes?
Yes.
No spoilers.
You're still awake. Oh, no. Well, we wanted to talk about Mass Effect multiplayer.
No spoilers.
More specifically, there's no story.
No spoilers, but Shepard dies.
Yeah. Well, the multiplayer, I played in the beta thingy that you could do, you know, the pre-release stuff.
I tried to.
And, yeah, you couldn't find a match, right? That was the problem.
Well, it would let me play alone, but that was miserable.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were, it's four people at a time, or up to four people at a time. And it's like stock characters, you know, you can pick the different classes, and then there's always a male human, female human, and then there's like two other things that would make sense for that, you know, alien race to be that, class. But then you pick that, and then you can kind of customize some colors and stuff, and you can customize your loadouts, and as you play, you can unlock, you know, different, modifications for your guns
and
whatnot.
Right, and you can buy packages with, upgrades and health packs and whatnot for Xbox points.
Yes, in-game currency or Xbox points,
right,
to be fair.
So if you don't want to work for your stuff, but you're rich, like if you have space credits left to you by Bill Gates, I don't know, you can use those to purchase equipment.
I don't think he gets much of the money anymore. I mean, he probably still has stock options, but...
I think he's the lead designer of Mass Effect, right?
Oh, well, that'd be weird. But anyway, you play in... it's kind of like a horde mode type of situation where you have, you know, your up to four human players and then waves of guys come after you. And
but you also have goals, too.
Occasionally, yeah. Certain waves will have, like, you know, go and hit this button because you're basically, like, you know, uploading a... transmission or shutting down something, or sometimes it's even like there will be kind of like boss type characters, almost like harder guys that you have to take out those ones within a certain time limit to continue on. And that was what I played before and seemed like way too easy. There's actually like a bronze, silver, and gold difficulty level for each one of those, or for, you know, for all the missions there. But anyway, when I played it in the demo, what I'm trying to get at is it seemed super easy. Like, it wasn't very fun because it seemed so easy. So Wes and I hopped in on bronze, like the easy setting, just the two of us, and cue the song. Someone had to do it.
I know. I can't resist. I'm sorry.
And we were getting our asses kicked, like, hard. Like, we wouldn't even make it past round three, usually. So, you know, because we're low level and we don't have a lot of equipment unlocked, so we figured, well, one of the nice things is you can actually, you know, have a private room that we had started where it was just us, and then we could actually just change the setting so that it was open, so like the last two slots could be filled by like random people online. And we were doing better, but even then we were having a hard time. Like, it was, I don't know if they adjusted the difficulty since the beta to make it more fun, because it was like easy to the point where it was kind of boring, and this was not the case at all. Like, I was having way more fun in the actual retail release because it was difficult. You actually had to work together as a team and stick together and watch each other's backs, because guys kind of come at you from every angle. Like, the way the maps are set up, there's a lot of like back ways to get around it, which is pretty cool. So yeah, it was way more fun than the beta. It kept us on our toes. We almost beat one of the rounds, but we still made, I think, to 9 out of 10 waves.
Right, yeah, we were on 9. No, we actually may have made it to 10. Maybe you did, but I died. I don't know. But yeah, we got close. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Those big maps kind of make it confusing occasionally because the enemies come at you from like multiple ways. So like, I remember once for like the first maybe 3 or 4 waves, like I was kind of walking around and I had trouble finding enemies to kill. I'm sure that wouldn't be the case toward the end of that particular section. I'm sure they start flooding pretty well. But yeah, there are bosses on Horde. I've never played Gears of War really. So like in the Horde mode, do they have like goals and bosses and stuff occasionally? Like do they drop a big enemy in there or something?
Don't release harder guys, but I don't think they ever do like boss type characters. I mean, I didn't play it enough to really know for sure.
All right.
But this one definitely has, you know, the big mech guys from the Cerberus, right, and the Husk guys. There's way harder versions of them in this one than there was in 2. There's all kinds of different versions of them now. And then there's Geth.
Which, right.
You know, so it's random. Well, you can set, which that's the kind of nice thing. You can set like what map you're on and what guys you're fighting. But you actually, if you set both of those to random, they each give you experience bonuses to be on random for some reason. So we just kept them on random the whole time.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. They give you a lot of character options too. There are quite a few classes. What was it, like 4 or 5, and then you had like individual things you could choose, male, female, and there were a couple other options in with each class.
Yeah. Well, they're all the same ones you can play in single player, but they like you can't use, obviously, because it pauses the game in single player. You can't use the wheel, which we had talked about last time. Was you have to do the shortcutted version, so you basically only have like 3 that you would have. So
yeah, I wonder why they didn't bring the wheel into that.
Well, because you would be getting shot while you're trying to navigate the wheel.
Yeah, good point.
And the wheel was kind of only there because you usually have, you know, you're controlling 3 people instead of just 1. So it kind of makes sense to have simplified it. It took me some getting used to, since I, in 2 and 1, exclusively used the wheel to accomplish everything.
You're a crazy person.
I'm getting more used to this now, and it made the combat definitely feel way more action-focused. I do like that you can just keep sprinting forever now. That's pretty awesome.
Right.
Oh, could you not do that before?
I'm pretty sure in 2, there was, like, running, but if you're in combat, then it changed normal run to sprinting, and it had a bar, like, with a reach charge associated with it.
Right. It kind of makes it easy to let your teammates do all the work and run around behind the building. But they do judge experience points, like how many you get based on how much effort you put into the fight. So
you would right kills and assists and all
right
that stuff.
you get credits after a certain time. We Jonah and I played for a while before we started actually earning credits. We didn't earn any until we got in with those two good people who helped.
Yeah, that didn't last. Suck at the game.
Right,
we're super high level.
Yeah,
yeah, then the credits thing. It's weird because what it is like. I don't know if you guys have looked too much into the. Getting unlocking things system, but it's kind of like getting booster packs for like the card game, like Magic or something. Except that there's three tiers to it. There's just like the regular cheapo one. In that one, there's like, you always only get like five things. And unfortunately, you can get duplicates, just like buying a booster pack of cards. Not within the same pack, but within what you've already unlocked. And if you buy the low end one, which is only like 5,000 credits, which is, by the time we were playing where we were actually getting credits, I had enough to buy two of those.
So there's three tiers though.
But yeah, the first
tier. When I played the demo, all there was tiers, because I couldn't get anybody in my game.
Yeah. Well, the low end one gives you like a slight chance of getting a rare unlock, and then the middle one gives you like I think guaranteed one with a chance of getting like a more rare, and then like the Spectre level pack is the one that like you have a chance of getting like a super duper rare or something like that. I don't know. So there's a lot of things to unlock, and I don't know how much it really matters. But you know, there's all kinds of different guns, and this one has modifications like different scopes and ammo clips and crazy stuff you can put on there. So I think they did the randomization thing. Well, for one, you know, that whole iPhone style, you know, you can only use in-game currency, but if you want a shortcut, just throw a couple dollars our way. That sort of thing. But kind of like, you know, was Lost Planet 2 did that, where it had a weird lottery thing, gambling thing or whatever to unlock stuff. And they said the reason they did it was so that not everyone always had the same equipment on the online.
The problem with the Lost Planet one, though, was that it was randomly...
Like 99% titles?
Yeah, sometimes you'd randomly get a weapon and sometimes you'd randomly get a title.
Sometimes or almost every time?
Almost every freaking time. And so it's like... The motivation like made sense, but those should have been like separate lotteries.
Yeah, I agree.
But Mass Effect doesn't have like the title stuff, right?
No, no. But it's
just the lottery for guns and stuff.
Yeah, and then when I first booted it up, I had gotten one random pack just for having like they had like a thing on Facebook where you could sign up, and then when you played the beta, if you'd played through that, then it unlocked one for you.
Had to click a button to annoy seven friends, and then it gives you a bunch of points.
Yeah. And then, actually, from having played Battlefield 3, it detected that, and it unlocked, like, a unique skin for the soldier class, and also, like, gave an experience bonus to that class, like a one-time bump in experience, which is one of the other things you can randomly get in those unlocks, is just like, hey, here's like 12,000 experience for that class. Enjoy.
Well, wait, though, because what exactly do you do with the experience? I thought that was the currency.
No, money is the currency. Experience are just like in the game. You know how you have those dots you fill in for your powers? It's exactly the same.
I misunderstood. I thought you were like getting experience and using that to buy booster packs.
No, that would be terrible. No, they're a separate thing. Yeah, we were getting a ton of experience even when we were sucking, just from like getting kills and stuff.
Okay.
But we weren't getting any money. No fat stacks of cash. Space cash.
Well, I was also confused because like I've been playing. Well, I played Binary Domain for review, and in that game, experience and currency are the same thing.
Yeah, that's weird. But yeah, it works fairly well in that aspect of, you know, keeping things pretty randomized. The other thing that's weird is you can get like ammo reloads and metagels that are basically like an extra life if you die, and your teammates or you have like a time limit where if they come and revive you, then you're revived. But if they're nowhere near you and you have metagel, you can heal yourself. The problem is those types of things are consumable.
Mm-hmm.
So like you don't just get some of those at the beginning of each round. You have to have gotten them randomly in those packs. And then, so it's actually like a very risk reward. Like, should I bother doing this, or should I just wait to see if my teammates can revive me, or if they can make it through this wave, then I'll revive anyway. So
did you have full, I don't remember, did they give you full power when you revived after a wave?
Yeah, when it was after a wave, you did. But after, when someone else survived you, I think you didn't have full health and stuff. It seemed like I had to immediately run and hide. Otherwise, I'd immediately die again. But, and then the other thing there's that's consumable is there's weapon and armor, and one other thing. I don't know. There was three things, but those also have bonus equipment that are consumable that you equip for one play, essentially. Like, so, you know, like you can equip a thing that makes your assault rifles better for the next game you play. So you make sure you use those wisely with your character that you're actually using that gun with, or else they're completely worthless. Because the thing with this game, the multiplayer and the main game work in such a way where you have like a weight system to the guns you're carrying, and you can just load up your guy with every gun, but it'll actually make all your recharge timers worse as far as how long they take to start refilling or for you to reload and stuff. So it forces you to be smart about balancing like what you actually use versus what's good with that class. So it's actually better than I was expecting going into it, knowing it was basically just horde mode. You know, it's not like a co-op campaign or anything awesome
right,
like that.
Right.
It's just all the action-y parts, which are actually pretty good by this point. You know, it was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
I was pleasantly surprised. I will actually play more of that, and I didn't expect to want to play it at all. And it ups that Galactus readiness.
Galactus?
He's gonna eat Earth, man.
Oh, man. I thought Reapers were bad. But it was Galactus all along. You just ruined the twist.
The Reapers are screwed when Galactus gets there.
He's just gonna eat them all.
Exactly. That's just fuel for his tummy.
Tummy fuel.
But anyway, what I was trying to say, I think, was galactic readiness.
There you go.
And I don't know, that apparently plays into the story in some way.
I haven't even started
the main story yet, so.
As a side note, tummy fuel is pretty much the least aggressive energy drink title I've ever heard.
It's a gentler, kinder energy drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, the galactic readiness is basically supposed to assist you in the final battle. I guess you'll have more troops at your disposal. Like, it doesn't increase much through the main story. I put in about, I'd say, 12
mostly
hours.
Just affects what ending you get, doesn't it?
Oh, I'm not even sure.
That's my understanding. I don't know if that's accurate.
And I do know that if you play the iPhone game, which looks pretty awesome, it's kind of like the Dead Space iPhone game, that helps with your readiness as well. So.
Yeah, I think I read a mini review from someone that said story and voice acting not so good, gameplay actually pretty good on that one. Hmm. So I'm going to probably grab it.
How much is it?
I don't know, more than an iPhone game should be, I think.
So like a shmup level,
like
a
$5 to $7 range, somewhere in there, I think.
Okay.
So, all
right.
Yeah. Oh well, it's Mass Effect related. I enjoy the series a lot.
Right, and yeah, the single player is amazing. Like, it's definitely a good little twisty story. It's got some big emotional moments. They really manipulate your heartstrings with all the music cues and such. It was at least one moment that probably had me closer to shedding a tear than any other video game ever has.
Even more than, what was it, King's Quest VI? Can a video game make you cry?
I don't think I ever played that. I'll have to look into that. I really like crying. Do that. Well, most Friday nights you'll find me in the floor of my apartment crying in the dark.
With headphones on, listening to Elliot Smith.
Right. Or playing King's Quest.
I got a question for you, though. How many robot chandeliers do you fight?
I haven't fought any yet.
Zero so far.
Yeah. Because in Binary Domain, you fight a robot chandelier.
Dang.
Okay.
So game of the year.
Is it a transformer? Does it transform into a chandelier? Or is it like a robot?
It starts as a chandelier.
But was there more than meets the eye?
There was more than meets the eye when robo tentacles pop out of it and you have to shoot the crap out of it.
Tell me more.
So I played Binary Domain for review. And,
oh, I thought this was just something that happened.
Oh, I was trying to make a transition, but you know, you can crap all over that if you want. It's good. Sorry, were you not done talking about Mass Effect?
No, I was making a joke about that happened to you in real life instead of in a video game. That's all. I was yeah. playing along with the transition until now.
Okay, so this is where the train wreck happens. And then...
Yeah.
So Binary Domain. I played that to completion, the full game, for review, which you can go on wingdamage.com and actually read the full review. But I really like that game quite a bit, except for the multiplayer, which is not worth playing. But the solo campaign is where it's at. I like it. One of the things that I like most about it is all the crazy enemies you fight. I mean, last week we talked about, you know, some of the standard foot soldiers and how, like, blowing different parts off them affects their behavior pretty drastically and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, those are just, like, the basic of basic enemies, you know, because later you fight a robot chandelier, so... It comes to that. But also, you know, you fight like an enormous motorcycle that transforms into a giant roller skating robot. So that's pretty cool. And robot ninjas that teleport? Why not? You know, they're in there too. Giant mechanical spider? Sure, sure.
That seems pretty standard issue, right?
Huge robo gorilla that has incredibly intense adrenaline pumping fight. Yeah, it's in there a couple times. But yeah, no, it's super good.
He attacks you and you just pump adrenaline all over him.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, no, one of the things I really like about that game is how, since you're always fighting robots, stuff is flying off of them constantly while you're shooting them. Like, you know, if you're actually getting a limb off, it affects their behavior. But even when you're not, like, you're shooting off like armored plating and stuff. Like, even on bosses, you're shooting off that kind of stuff. And so it makes your weapons feel like super heavy, which is really satisfying. So, because I've played certain games before where, like, your weapons, you know, have that crappy, like, pea shooter feel to them.
Yeah.
And that's, like, never the case in Binary Domain. Like, your weapon constantly makes you feel like you have crazy powers because you're constantly blowing crap off of all of the enemies.
Nice.
And it's pretty great. You know, it's definitely not a perfect game. There's going to be, you know, like, little rough patches here and there. Like, during some of the boss fights, you can, if you revive at just the wrong time, you can die again. You know, that sort of thing can happen because there's no frame of invincibility when you revive. Because, you know, you revive with those med packs, as you saw in the demo, where it's like each squad member can hold about 3 med packs, unless you have upgrades, which will make them be able to hold even more. So, yeah, there was, like, a few times where, you know, I'd revive and then immediately die again, or little kind of annoying things like that. But it's, like, this is definitely one of those games where all the little rough patches here and there were severely outweighed by the fact that I was blowing pieces off of a robot chandelier. That was pretty great.
I hear you were also jump kicked in the face by a robot when you tried to peek around a corner.
That was like the first thing that happened in that. I was like, oh, this is my little cover-based shooter game. All right, I played a bunch of these. And yeah, peek around the corner and get jump kicked in the face by a robot. I mean, what's not to love right there? And I mean, you get your French robot buddy with his little red bandana. And, you know, how do you not just fall in love
with him? Neckerchief.
His neckerchief. constantly calling you Monsieur. I mean, how do you not fall in love with that? But
well,
yeah,
it's Yakuza team, so you knew it was going to be super weird. It is
super weird, and it's one of those games that it gets weirder the more you play it. Like Starts out fairly normal, and then like there's a lot of like, you know, crazy plot twists and stuff. And I actually enjoyed the story. I mean, like the writing and performance like kind of goes back and forth in quality. Like certain characters are voiced way better than others. There's like some weird inconsistencies with like how certain Japanese people have just speak Japanese. Because okay, I should explain that you're a group of people from various countries like going into Japan.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So like you and your buddy are both American, and then you have your other squad members. There's like 2 British people and like a Chinese person. Anyway, so like the Japanese people, some of them exclusively speak Japanese. Some of them are. Hilarious Japanese stereotype voices speaking English, and some of them just somehow don't have any accent whatsoever, like they didn't grow up in Japan or something. I don't know. It doesn't explain it. But the accents in that regard just seem kind of a little random at times. But even still, like, you know, there are still, you know, some interesting things that it does with the story. I like how in like there's a character development thing that happens like three quarters of the way through the game that's not important to the overall narrative at all, but like is just like a small little character development thing that I like how they basically show you this little scene from the main character's past that is just like, you know, here's a little motivation thing that it doesn't explain, but you get the point, and it's nice and subtle. Whereas, like, I feel like a lot of games would have been like, oh, so that is why you don't like robots. Thank you for telling me why you did. Like, it wasn't even him. It's not even something that any other character is seeing. It's just, like, it very briefly for, like, 30 seconds, like, shows you, you know, a little scene, and it just like it was surprisingly tasteful, just because it definitely seems like something that a lot of other games would have kind of beat you over the head with that simple idea.
Yeah,
not that important to the story.
Pretty normal in games, unfortunately.
So that was cool. But the conversation system is actually like the weakest part of the game. Like, you know how one of the whole conceits of it was that you're building the trust level of all your teammates.
Yeah.
And there are a ton of things in that system that work really well, but the thing that you would think would be the most important part of it is the weakest part, and that is the actual conversations. Because now, you know how you saw this in the demo where, like, you don't have to pause the action, you'll just, like, hold the button down and be able to hit a different conversation options. But half the time, those options don't make any sense. Like, somebody will be...
You're telling me.
Yeah, somebody will, like, ask you a yes or no question, and, like, maybe two of your four options will be something along the lines of, God damn! And then, like, none of them are no. And maybe one of them might be yes and something that actually makes sense. But then, unlike BioWare games like Mass Effect and stuff, it doesn't have
him. It doesn't fill it in, right?
Yeah, it doesn't fill it in. It doesn't have him elaborate on what's being said.
Nice.
So you never know why most of those decisions were there. Like, what was the reason? Like, what was this supposed to even really be saying?
So do you feel that that was a contributing factor to you having most of your teammates not your friend by the end?
No, because I don't think it's ever hard to know what to say to somebody.
Gotcha.
Like, it's pretty easy to, like, say the right thing to people to build up their trust. Although occasionally, if you have somebody on your squad, saying one thing might bring one person's trust and another person's, like, one person's up and another person's down.
Right.
But still, like, I mean, it's pretty easy to manipulate that stuff. It's just, like, as far as an actual, like, role-playing aspect, that part definitely seems like something was lost in translation. And I guess I actually read that the Japanese version, he does elaborate, which is even weirder.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But, like, that part, like, just didn't get localized for some reason, which is really weird. But, yeah, it makes the whole conversation system awkward. But fortunately, there's so many other factors that go into that trust level, like your performance during battle, your respecting their suggestions on combat tactics. You know, just like all kind of not shooting them is one. Yeah. Which at first I didn't like that, but actually as I played the game more and more, I kind of grew to like that because it forced me to shoot more like tactically.
Hmm.
But
I was definitely having trouble with that in the demo.
Yeah.
Not shooting my dudes. Because, you know, inevitably party members always want to wander right in front of you for some reason in shooters.
Yeah, and it felt like kind of lenient almost. Like, it almost seemed like you had to get, like, two shots before they cared.
Huh.
I don't know. Maybe that's not true. That's just what it seemed like. But anyway, like, you know, you choose kind of who goes with you on these different missions, so you can see, like, little differences and, you know, incidental dialogue and all that. But, like, the biggest important part is that, like, near the end of the game, there's kind of, based on all the trust levels from your various squad mates, it will affect, like, who lives and who dies and who actually sticks by your side, and it will can pretty intensely affect like the difficulty of the final boss. And unfortunately, I had the worst setup that you can possibly have. Because
yeah.
I had as many people as you can have die, and you know, one of them betrays me and adds to the giant number of like mech warrior mech suits I'm fighting at the end, and just yeah, I had like the worst circumstances. But then I went and I was like watching on YouTube like all the different variations of it. So there's at least three different variations to that like final encounter and like the few cut screens before and after it based on all those different trust levels. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's definitely one that it's, you know, it's not going to be as quite as polished in certain areas. But like, I think what it does well outweighs any of that. Cause I mean, you get to fight robot saber-tooth tigers.
You get to punch them though.
You
like
probably,
Yakuza 2 style?
I wouldn't recommend getting near a robot saber-tooth tiger, but I'm pretty
sure... Well, if sure, you have to, though. I mean,
I'm pretty sure you can technically punch anything.
Okay.
I mean, you have a melee attack.
True, this is true.
So, and it is pretty satisfying, like when you're fighting the foot soldiers and whatnot, and one of them's like, you know, started, like, you shot its legs off and it's crawling towards you, and then you just, like, smash your gun into the ground and blow it up.
Nice.
Pretty good. But yeah, the multiplayer, like, it definitely seems like it was just made for a bullet point. Like, that's, the multiplayer is really not worth playing. Like, there's a versus mode, and that one, it's like, well, the whole thing that makes this game cool is the enemy design, so you just
yeah.
do that out. and then they have, like, a version of horde mode, which you would think would be the like, the coolest.
Right, that would be
because
good.
Because they have all these awesome enemy designs. But they start out the enemy density way too low, so it becomes kind of like what you were describing with the demo of the Mass Effect multiplayer, where it's just like too easy to be interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like both multiplayer modes are just totally, from my the time I spent with them, just didn't feel like they were worth playing at all. But I like the single player so much that I would still like highly recommend checking out Binary Domain, just because yeah, I had a ton of fun like playing every encounter. Like, it's one of those games where you see enemies and you get excited to fight them because fighting them is just a really fun thing to do.
Mm.
And also because, as I kind of mentioned earlier in the show, experience. Instead of just getting experience points, it's like every time you're killing guys, it's just racking up money. And so then when you get to these shops, then you're upgrading all your guns for you and your squad mates and buying like the nano machines that give you different buffs and whatnot. So it's like every time you see like a big group of guys, you're thinking like, cha-ching, because you get tons of money. But yeah, no, I really think people should check out Binary Domain if they like fighting a bunch of really interesting enemies and a story that, while not executed perfectly, is at least interesting enough to make me care about it more than most shooters would.
Because
mm-hmm. You know, it kind of has the whole like Blade Runner, Terminator Salvation type thing going on, where it's like robots that don't think they're robots, and you know, some twists and turns on that whole thing, which I always enjoy that sort of thing. So yeah, check out Binary Domain. Do it. Go read my review.
I already did. I haven't played the game. I did install it, so that at least was that.
That installation screen made me remember that Six Axis exists.
Yeah, same here. I forgot.
Because he's like holding that little communicator thing or whatever, and you move the PS3 controller and it like twists it around and stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, Six Axis exists apparently.
DeviantArt, you've gone too far.
Why are you guys Skyping a bunch of...
Why is Mass Effect the Hedgehog tagged with results?
What does that even mean?
I don't know, but it's a thing. So I played an RPG that wasn't Mass Effect, and wasn't that good. I hate to say it, but the Hyperdimension Neptunia Mark II, or whatever, however you say the name of
that
game.
Oh, but it sounds so good.
Well, it sounds crazy.
Did you actually remember that full name, or did you have to look it up?
I'm looking at what you wrote down, which isn't very accurate.
I was going to say, I don't know if what I wrote down is even accurate at
all. It's not. I'm trying to modify what you wrote down to be the actual title.
Okay.
It's the game that, like, Inafune's Concept company was helping with, and it's... The setup is kind of humorous. It's these RPG characters are basically the various game consoles, and they're trying to fight game piracy is essentially what it's about. But it's in this crazy, you know, cuckoo fantasy world. And most of the enemies and stuff are parodies of stuff from other games. Like, you fight a ghost, and it looks like the pink ghost from Pac-Man, and it's like Clive instead of Clyde. And there's Miss Clives that have bows in their hair and otherwise identical. And little Space Invader guys, and Horse Bird, who I didn't even realize was a parody of Chocobo until Jesse pointed it out. And the gameplay itself isn't terrible. Like, you know, it's JRPG, but instead of just being random battles and hitting the one button a bunch, they tried to keep it a little more interesting where the battles aren't random, which is nice. And you have like a grid that you can run around in, and then you have action points, so you can do different like attacks and combos and special moves and stuff within that. So the combat itself wasn't terrible. Like, I was actually kind of enjoying it. The problem came in when it pretty early on, like within the first 4 hours or so. I wasn't that far in, especially for a JRPG. I already got to the point where I was going to have to grind to progress, because you get these little missions, and you can repeat them, so you could grind by doing them over and over again, but I don't want to have to do that. So I was just taking them once and beating them and calling it good. It requires you to go back to the same dungeons, which are fairly short. They're just like little areas that are different themes, and you run around them and kill dudes, and sometimes have to collect certain items or whatever. You know, general RPG stuff. But there was these giant wolf guys, and the first time I came across one of them, it was kind of off in its own little area, and I was like, oh, he must be like some optional boss, because when I tried to fight him, he was killing my guys in one or two hits. And then it got to the point where, like, no, that's just a normal guy, and you're gonna have to grind a bit, because now you have to kill a few of these to accomplish a mission, and that area is also the next story point. So I am basically like, I can't progress the main story, and I can't finish the last new mission I have until I've done enough grinding where I can take those guys down, essentially. And so I'm like, okay, well, we'll see how this goes. And then I went into a battle with these kind of weenie guys but they have a paralyze move. And they were paralyzing my guys to the point where I actually didn't get to move that entire battle, and was dead. And that's when I ejected the game and put it back in its Gamefly case. And I'm going to send it back, because it was just like, this isn't fun anymore. It's like, it had its points. It's low budget, clearly, like, but it had its charm, and it had a goofy sense of humor. And I can appreciate that, but I was done with it. So
that's a shame, because like the first night or two that I was talking to you while you were playing it, you're like, "Yeah, this is actually kind of cool." And then like then I talked to you the day that happened, and you're just like, "Yeah, it was today, right?" And you're just like, "Yeah, I'm never playing this again."
Yeah,
I was like, "Wow, that took a turn."
Exactly, and that's what I mean. It was like that soured me enough that I just don't have the time to invest in the game that's going to do that, you know.
Yeah.
Especially not a modern game. It's like super old games, you kind of expect that sort of thing sometimes.
Yeah, the situation you described, like the paralysis, you know, where you can't do anything and then you die, is like something that should have died with like Dragon Quest II.
Yeah, and maybe there's an audience for this sort of thing. It's not me. I did finish Costume Quest and Bastion, so I finished two games since last show.
Nice.
We've talked Bastion a lot, so I don't really need to talk any more about that other than to say that I liked it a lot, and I'm glad I finished it, because the ending was pretty cool, I thought.
And that song.
And the song's good.
Good credit song.
Yeah. Costume Quest, I already think I went into mechanics and whatnot before.
Yeah, you talked about it to some extent last episode.
Yeah. It's so short that it doesn't really change much throughout the course of the game. You know, it's like you have a set types of things you're doing, and there's basically like three areas you do them in, and then then you fight the boss and it ends, and then you can get the expansion, which I did because I was liking it enough to want more. I was kind of in an RPG mood, which is why I tried that other one in the first place. And that the expansion is like, it's kind of cool in that it's you go into like the monsters from the main game's dimension and you go on a quest within that. It's pretty short. I think it's only like 3 hours more, and it's like $5, so that's not bad, you know. I'm not someone who gets hung up on game length versus cost too much, depending on the situation, obviously.
Then you're gonna love my $600 5-minute game.
I said to an extent. Apparently the Steam version just includes it, because that one coming out on PC was kind of the situation. I don't know if you heard of the whole, like, Notch jokingly saying he would fund Psychonauts 2, and then them being like,
yeah,
well, let's really talk about that, and nothing's come of it yet, but it doesn't mean it won't someday, you know, type of thing. Well, this was kind of the same thing, where some dude who was a fan of theirs and liked Costume Quest and had a lot of money was like, why isn't this game on PC? And he's like, because we don't have the money to do that. And he's like, I will give you that money. And that's, I guess, what happened. He became an investor in making the PC version, so that's cool. And so they just included. So, and it's been on sale. They've been doing a lot of stuff. They just put stacking on there on Steam, and so a bunch of the Double Fine stuff's been on sale because of that, which is cool. But I already had most of them. I don't have stacking yet, though. But I will probably miss that sale, unfortunately, by the time I, you know, get paid again. I try not to buy too many games per paycheck because, you know, Jesse knows it gets crazy.
No such thing.
But anyway, so I enjoyed it. The second part of it, or the DLC part of it, was kind of more of the same. They add more, you know, 3 new costumes. You're doing the same types of tasks. So if you're looking for something like radically different, it's not that. But I was just looking for more of that game because the aesthetic and the charm and the writing and everything was really good. Like, one thing I really appreciate about Costume Quest as a game was that they write kids as kids, you know, like they actually kind of talk like kids and think like kids.
not like an Orson Scott Card
no
book.
not like where his excuse is that they're all geniuses, so that
every
way he can just
child
write them,
is a genius,
that way he can just write them as adults, and he throws in the word fart a few times and then they're kids. But no, they actually kind of, they talk like kids. Like, their whole motivation in the main game is that whichever of the twins you don't pick as the main character, because it's the two, brother and sister, and you pick one to play as, the other one gets kidnapped. Your motivation is to get them back so that you don't get grounded, because you don't want to get in trouble by your parents, which is like a total little kid response, you know. So I actually wrote I haven't done a Tales from the Backlog in a really long time, so I went ahead and did one for this. So that'll be up, I think, by the time this goes live. So there's that to look forward to if you missed it.
How many robot chandeliers out of 10 would you give?
I don't know how that scale works in relation to games that aren't binary domain. It had none of those, if that's what you're asking.
Okay. But, all right. I mean,
one of the new suits was a Yeti, so that was cool, and a pirate, and what was the third one? I don't remember. Anyway, it's getting pretty late. But I enjoyed it, and it was totally worth checking out for, you know, especially because if you want something that's, you know, gives you that RPG flavor, but you're not going to have to commit 60 hours to it. You can blow through, like, the entirety in probably, like, 10 to 15 hours or something. Like, I got 100% completion on both things, and I think the main game is about 7 or 8 hours, and then the expansion's another 3. So, yeah, probably about 10 hours of gameplay total. For that would amount to 20 if you bought it on consoles, and 15 if you bought it on Steam that comes with it. So, yeah, it was worth it. I was glad I played it. But I think that's it. I'm not going to talk about Yakuza. I went back to it, but there's not much to say.
The first one?
Yeah, except that it's ridiculous.
Did you hit anybody with a bicycle?
Several people, in fact.
You pretty much can't get into a battle without picking up a bicycle and bashing somebody over the head with it.
At least not in the first game. They're everywhere.
Same thing in the fourth game when I was playing that. And then you get that big guy, and that, because that one has the four characters, and you're picking up motorbikes and smashing people with them.
So do you have anything else, Mike, or did you pretty much just play Street Fighter?
I just played Street Fighter. I was going to talk about that that Super Nintendo game that was coming out, and then I realized that they only were making 600 copies of it, and they're all spoken for already. So.
Oh, man. Okay, then.
Yeah. It's not worth mentioning.
Okay. Well, I guess that will wrap it up for this episode then. So don't forget to check out the main site, wingdamage.com, where you can check out all of our shows, and also sometimes articles.
Sometimes a review of Binary Domain.
I have a me talking about Costume Quest coming up. And Dave, long-lost editor for Wing Damage, wrote us an article that went up last week, so you should check that out. It's pretty amusing. About his life now as a banker, rather than being a guy that sells video games for a living. and you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wingdamage for the main site, or our much more often updated personal accounts. Mine is Spambot, Jesse's is Mainfinger, Mike is the Mike Bachman, and Wes is Wes the Hero. He unfortunately had to leave before we wrapped it up.
Actually, I'm still here.
What?
What?
What happened?
I fell asleep a bunch.
Oh, okay. Well, I gave you the leave to go.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought I'd stick around and add all my brilliant commentary that I added.
That you slept through.
Right.
Okay,
yeah,
well,
yeah, it's almost 4 a.m. in my neck of the woods.
I know, that's why, yeah. I was like, yeah, you should just go to bed. Yeah, we can handle it, no worries.
Oh, all right.
All right, well, thanks for being on.
Oh, yeah,
so
we lose
late.
An hour.
I know.
Oh, yeah, man. Dude,
no.
It's almost 3 a.m.
Oh, man.
All right, well, we're going to end.
Must be lonely.
It's 3 a.m. I must be lonely.
So we're going to end now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
We'll have to pay Matchbox 20 royalties.
No, that's why I had to cut that off.